The election delivers a mixed bag of results in Indiana. Democrat Joe Donnelly wins a Senate seat. Republican Mike Pence wins the governor's office. Tony Bennett taken out, and two Republican supermajorities in the General Assembly. That plus winners and losers and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending November 9,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Indiana Republicans had a big day on Election Day, but Democrats won the top prize. Joe Donnelly defeated Richard Murdoch in the race for U.S. Senate.
But this is about our future, the chance for good jobs, to see our economy grow, to work together in Washington. We can solve these problems. We can solve the budget deficit problem. We can solve the problem of making sure our men and women come home from Afghanistan. And
but I worry you, when Hoosiers who look at the state level to see a state they are so proud of, because it's lived within its means and it's made hard decisions, and yet they've opted now to be supportive of that group in Washington that wants to constantly kick the can down the road.
What was the biggest factor in the Donnelly win? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Mike McDaniel. John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, did Joe Donnelly win or did Richard Murdoch lose?
Oh, I think it was a combination of things. You never have one thing that determines one of these things, but the fact that Murdoch was never able to consolidate the Republican base after a contentious primary was a huge part of it, because the, quote, Lugar Republicans couldn't bring themselves to vote for him. And then when you – I've never seen a campaign where they use a candidate's own words against them as much as they did in this one, which was problematic for Murdoch from day one.
And not just the comment about rape and abortion.
Right, but other things. I mean, right. A list of them. In fact, that last ad that was run against him where they were all his, it looked like, you know, Richard Murdoch's greatest hits kind of thing, or not greatest hits, that you see when they're selling record albums and stuff, all of which were quotes that were used against him. And then I think Donnelly also ran a campaign where he tried to do everything in his power not to be scary to people and go get Republican voters, and ran against the president on some things, talked about being for the Bush tax cut. So he was playing to the Republican base of this from day one. So I think it was a combination of things. But again, I've never seen a campaign where a candidate's own words were used against him as much as they were in this campaign against Richard Murdoch.
Well, and speaking of what Richard Murdoch said, that his speech on election night, it had sore loser written all over it.
Sure did. You know, there's no question about that. You asked the one factor to take away from this. It seems to me that the Republicans, before they declare war on women again, they better count. Because what happened here is that the female vote went both for President Obama and for Joe Donnelly. And in very, very substantial, by a very, very substantial margin. And it's because they were completely tone deaf about issues that women care about. And of course they care about the economy and they care about jobs, and that's all there. But when you start telling women that they can't make decisions on birth control and their own bodies, you are in and you're a white guy in a suit, you're in dangerous territory.
Well, Mitt Romney won Indiana with about 56% of the vote. Richard Murdoch came in at about 44, 12 points behind. That's a bad showing.
Oh, it's a horrible showing when you consider that. And you consider that the attorney general candidate, your true baseline in this race, outpaced even Mitt Romney.
He was at 59, Greg. So.
Yeah, he had a raw vote of much more than Mitt Romney. The drop-off from every Republican candidate to Richard Murdoch was very large. And in fact, Glenda Ritz in her race for superintendent of education had far more votes than Richard Murdoch did. So you saw a huge number of Republicans cross over, and you saw a huge number of Republicans just drop out and not vote in that race, and that was bad news all the way around for
Murdoch. We're going to talk a little bit about Joe Donnelly here. We're kind of mostly talking about Murdoch, but tell me, is Murdoch's career as a politician damaged, finished?
It's damaged. I don't know if it's finished, but because we've seen lots of politicians who've been able to change positions, apparently with some effectiveness,
like Mitt Romney,
over the years. But one issue that, as we went around here, you didn't talk about was the auto bailout and the stance that he had mm-hmm. taken in opposing the federal intervention, and in fact had gone to court, of course, to fight that solution to the problem, which, if you look at the exit polling that the networks did, not just in Indiana, but Michigan and in Ohio and Pennsylvania and other areas, that was a tremendous factor. And so you get into some of these areas.
Well, Kokomo, that becomes a plus for Donnelly too, because he supported the bank.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. Well, and he effectively used that issue. But I think to Mike's point, it's a collection of factors. You have the ill will, the resentment that was created among what we've been calling the Lugar Republicans. Right. I'm sure some of whom who sat on their hands, either voted for Donnelly, didn't vote at all in that race, or stayed home altogether. Then you have this issue with the auto bailout. Then you have the comments that didn't sit well with women, or I'm sure males as well.
Sure.
So it was all of those factors.
Donnelly
together.
Ran a good campaign, right?
I think Donnelly ran a good campaign. I think he did what he had to do to try to make himself come off as moderate every step of the way, even though he voted for Obamacare and some other things that clearly wouldn't put him in that category. But to answer the question on Murdoch again, he did alienate women. There's no question. Overwhelmingly, he did. But that was all aimed at him. That wasn't a Republican Party deal on a day that we elected two women to Congress, three new members to the State House of Representatives, a woman lieutenant governor. We had a pretty good day electing women Republicans all over Indiana. So this was aimed specifically at him. So don't pass this
and
off.
It was also aimed at Aiken,
and it was also aimed at some other congressional
Aiken
candidates.
Right. It's not
and
in
it was
Indiana.
I understand that, okay. Mike. It was also aimed in part at Romney and Ryan. But the other part about that is Joe Donnelly is a moderate. He is more moderate than some Democrats would like. And the other thing is, when you talk about Obamacare, which you use in a pejorative sense, when that gets fully enacted and it gets tweaked, which it will between now and then, it's going to be like Y2K. People are going to say, oh, what happened to the government takeover? It's private insurance. I have my own doctor. Now I have health care.
Yeah. Meantime, the president has embraced the term Obamacare.
Yeah, he's all for it. Mike doesn't use it in a positive sense, however.
Absolutely not.
Oh, well, you're wrong.
In the race for governor, Republican Mike Pence was in the lead over Democrat John Gregg from beginning to end. But in the end, it was just a 4-point race.
You believed in us. You believed in Indiana. And because of you, Indiana won tonight. I will always respect our differences, and I will work every day to earn your trust as we build a more prosperous future for all the people of our state.
And I just asked for Hoosiers to rally around him and pray and work for his success and well-being, because I will.
And Delaney, did Mike Pence receive a mandate?
I would just like to start out by saying that response from John Gregg was the kind of response that Richard Murdoch should have given.
It's the kind of response that any candidate should give.
Anybody should give in that situation, and he was very gracious about it. Obviously, he's elected governor, okay? And how broad that mandate is will remain to be seen. He stayed away from all the social issues in his campaign. If he comes right out of the chute using those social issues again, we'll see how long that mandate lasts. If he comes out of it dealing like he says he's going to deal with all people and respecting all views and working together to better Indiana, I think he'll have a lot of support.
He didn't get to 50%.
Mike Pence won the campaign for governor, didn't run a single negative ad against his opponent the entire time.
Why, won by
it's
only
probably,
4 points.
That's exactly right. I mean, if he would have spent $8 million of those dollars trashing John Gregg, the way every commercial that was run against Mike Pence was a negative against him. Commercial John Gregg ran was a negative against
him. It was a swipe of some kind.
Commercial he ran.
It's about his record, Michael.
Mike Pence won, and he did it without running a single negative ad.
He promised not to. You're going to say he was going to break his promise?
He did, but he could have, and you know as well as I do, conventional wisdom in politics is that if you're attacked and if you don't respond in kind, people start believing.
But you know, I didn't interrupt
you.
Go ahead.
He could have soiled John Gregg in a big way of going after him with negatives, and he could have doubled that total if he wanted to. He said he wasn't going to do it, and he did it. And subsequently, with the Republican majority he has in both houses and his agenda, he's going to end up having a great program and going to end up leading Indiana in a great way.
There's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking taking place now by Democrats who are saying that, you know, John Gregg got within 3.5 points, and if they'd done things differently, maybe they could have gotten closer. But if he'd gone negative earlier, if he'd gotten closer, don't you expect the Republican Governors Association would have been in here with the negative ads?
That's what begs the question, Mike's response to the suggestion that that the negative campaigning did in fact erode the lead that most polling indicated down to this 3.5-4 percentage point. And it does beg the question, what would have happened if instead of some of the sort of the folksy Sanborn spots that were very, you know, made him the avuncular guy with two first names, if those had been replaced early on with something a lot harder hitting, then it does raise the question, how would that have affected it? Now, I'm sure there would have been money coming in here to respond, but then...
And he wouldn't have broken his promise about positive...
Well, apparently not, I guess.
But that's what I'm saying. The job would have gotten
somebody else done.
Look, at 49.6%, round up to 50, Mike Pence's performance was about as expected, according to the polling. And what that says is that there are a number of people who have a lot of support for him and a lot of people who just aren't sure. And it's up to Mike Pence as governor to win those people over and to push his platform forward, because he could get it through the General Assembly with the super majorities he's got. But if he wants a second term, he's going to have to find a way to win those people over that he didn't get this time.
And I think part of the problem he had and why there are so many reservations is because of the Tea Party Association, which is not a negative campaign.
You can't make him say Tea Party.
Maybe not, but he said it on camera. When you talk about using his own words,
In Washington.
Oh, so it doesn't count because it's there and not here?
He is
the Tea Party. And that's where the reservations come in. And to the extent that he is linked in the voter's mind with Richard Murdoch, if he comes out of the chute with that agenda, I think he's going to have problems.
It just shows that
there was an effort. That's how John Gregg got that close, because there was an effort to link the two of them together.
Sure.
But Pence got elected.
It didn't work. He won.
I understand.
And
but
he served all 4 years.
That's because he tried to assuage all those concerns about the social issues. My point is, if he comes out like Richard Murdoch with the social issues, he's going to have trouble.
Well, I think that potential exists.
It shows that a former host of an Indianapolis-based political talk show can become governor. Governor Scheller?
There you go.
No, I think...
This was a huge win for Mike Pence, and he's going to be a great governor.
The election night surprise was the defeat of Republican State School Superintendent Tony Bennett. Democrat Glenda Ritz won the largest percentage of votes of anyone in either party in a competitive race on Tuesday and will become the new superintendent. She's been a teacher for 33 years and is currently a media specialist at Crooked Creek Elementary in Indianapolis. Ritz says she hopes to make changes quickly.
Get away from the high-stakes testing and the A to F grading system, as well as making sure that we're going to have public dollars go to public schools and get some real support from the bottom up.
John Katzenberger, with that vote, did the public call for putting the brakes on education reform?
Well, you could interpret it that way, because she won, and not only won, but she won big. But, you know, the legislature went more Republican and more toward the people who actually have to enact these things. So I think it's a mixed bag, Jim. I think that what they have in Glenda Ritz, who came out because she had a lot of grassroots support from teachers across the state, and a lot of people who are very conservative and concerned about the Common Core federal standards, voted for her as well. I mean, you look at those vote totals, and it came from a lot of Republicans. What the Democrats have in her is an opportunity to enunciate their opposition to this and to be the person who can maybe put the firewall on the legislature, but that's a tough job.
But I say this was much like the first election for Greg Ballard over Bart Peterson. The question was Tony Bennett or not Tony Bennett, and Glenda Ritz is the accidental superintendent.
Well, he himself said, so I'm quoted as saying, this wasn't a referendum on education reform, if it was an education on Tony Bennett, basically saying what you're saying, Jim, that it's don't take this as a suggestion that the public is somehow opposed to the expansion of vouchers and charter schools. However, it's hard not to read something of that into it. You had a well-organized campaign by teachers and the State Teachers Association, which shows that it still has some muscles to flex, and at a time when maybe we thought that they were sort of not, didn't have the clout they used.
I tell you what else I think it was. It had something to do with Tony Bennett's style, because all of the policies that he ran on were Mitch Daniels' policies, and we know well that Mitch Daniels has an approval rating of something like 66% still. So Mitch Daniels runs on those policies, things go well. Tony Bennett runs with the attitude that you get from a basketball coach, and it doesn't go so well.
Well, I think there's some truth to that. I think there was some the fact that he was so forceful in what he did, and how he went about doing it. This was a highly effective social media campaign, generated mostly, I think, by the Indiana State Teachers Association, in conjunction with a lot of other groups, as John mentioned, who were unhappy with some of the aggressiveness of these reforms. But, it's one of those deals where I didn't see this thing coming. I thought Tony would have made it through with the kind of leads.
I thought he'd get a scare.
I thought it'd be close. The polling indicated it was going to be close at the end. But I thought he'd come through with the Romney numbers and the Pence numbers and so forth and so on. But, this is a deal where now she sits there and with a legislature with 69 Republicans in the House and 37 in the Senate. So it's going to be difficult for her to change a lot of policy, and it's very difficult for her to do that. But, she's going to be a voice. I mean,
she can stop some things, right? But she's kind of the new Maytag repairman.
Yeah, she's going to be sitting there by herself with nothing to do.
Get out of here. I mean, I disagree that it's all personality, because when Mitch Daniels ran, it wasn't only on education, it was on a myriad of things. This was only on the education reform. And the problem I've had with Tony Bennett from the beginning is every idea that anybody ever had gets thrown up as education reform simultaneously with no evaluation of whether that's successful or not. And by the way, the target is around the teacher. This was all the teacher's fault. ISTA certainly had a big role in this, but so did teachers who were not active in the unions.
I'm hearing from a lot of them who think ISTA is getting too much credit.
Well, and they ought to get credit for the fact that they got involved. And in dealing with the legislature, the other point to remember is that this social media system is now set up, and those teachers are out there, and that can be harnessed against legislative races as well as the superintendent's race. So if they start messing around with that, they do that at their own peril.
Okay.
She's going to be a voice for reform, but she's going to be a voice for public education. I always thought that Tony Bennett was against public education, and that's what the voucher program was all about, is to try to destroy public education.
Republicans maintained their supermajority in the state Senate, and they now have a supermajority in the Indiana House to go along with it. There are so many new Republicans in the Indiana House, 19 in all, that name tags were handed out when the group met to choose its leadership this afternoon. Speaker Brian Bosma remains in charge, but after his election warned that the new majority of 69-31 could be temporary.
Don't take much for granted. Nothing is permanent. And do what's right for the state and let the politics shake out for itself.
John Schwanes, should we expect the Republicans to run roughshod over the Democrats come January?
Let's start with the premise that they can, clearly, if they want to, now that they do have a supermajority. Speaker Bosma went out of his way to say that, as you just pointed out in the clip, that he doesn't want to do that. He says in some ways there's almost more of a burden and responsibility on his shoulders and on that of members of his caucus to make sure the process unfolds properly. Now, that's what we talk about what you'd expect to hear after elections. That's what you'd expect to hear right after elections.
Right.
The challenge here, though, is, and he made reference to this, he quipped about it being, talk about leadership, there are basically 100 leaders elected in the minds of each member. I'm a leader. And what you have here is, keep in mind, we have 19 newly elected members this time, coupled with, what, 23, I think, last time. So you're almost to a half of the chamber new. So what I think the leadership challenge for him is, it may be all at one Republican caucus, but it's a lot of different factions, some very conservative factions that were elected last time around.
Right.
And these are freshmen who aren't necessarily content to sit on the back bench
as
some of their
time.
Predecessors. So it's not necessarily the unified, you know, walk in lockstep caucus that having 69.
You didn't answer
names.
My question. Will they run roughshod?
They can.
Let's try John.
Look, I'll be surprised if they don't. And it won't be because Brian Bosma's not pulling on the reins awful hard, because he understands. Remember before the election, he had the press conference, and he was talking about the proposals from both candidates for governor who wanted to cut taxes the first thing they did. And Brian Bosma was the one who said, oh, wait a minute, we need to stop and look at it. He gets it. He knows the task before him, and he knows with 69 members, it's a big lasso.
Well, he also knows he's got 69 members who need to pass something out, and if you give it all back in tax cuts, it's only the governor who's passing
things out. It's not the point of the tax cuts, though. I mean, what he was saying there is, we need to be measured,
right.
And he knows that that's awful difficult to do with 69. So he's going to try, and he's going to have a really difficult time.
So bad night for Democrats running for the House. They end up with only 31, but they've now got Scott Peleth as a leader for the first time, and Pat Bauer, who was trying to get back into leadership, has been thwarted at that. Are the Democrats in better shape going forward today than they were yesterday?
I think that's the case. I think you know it's time for a new era here, and I think there'll be a renewed emphasis on the issues and what needs to be done. I mean, the foremost of this is health care. A decision has got to be made by the 16th, and Mike Pence punted on that the last time.
No, he says he doesn't want...
Okay,
he doesn't.
So we're not going to have the 400,000 potential people covered by insurance in Indiana because of him.
He's going to leave it to the federal government, and he affirmed that position on the day after his election.
Well, that's great. I'm sure that all of the health care providers in Indiana...
We're not going to have the $610
million extra dollars. The people in health care in Indiana will applaud that because they want to see it enacted, and they want to see it done in a Hoosier way, and he won't pick up the reins because he doesn't really care about state government.
All right, not to be throwing a wet blanket on this.
69 members of the Indian House. It's a great majority, Ann. I know you hate it. You hate it, but it's true. 69 members, they're going to do wonderful things. I'll tell you what they are going to do, because he's done it every year. Brian Bosma had an announcement during his campaign where he laid out their agenda, and he talked about jobs, and he talked about early childhood education. It's their goals. Every time they've done this, and they've done it before every election,
right.
They have followed through on the programs that they said they were going to pass. Go back and look at that. That tells you what's going to be the primary focus of the Indiana House Republicans, because he's done it every year. Democrats have never put out a program before the election.
He has.
And they haven't followed through on it.
And he has delivered. But the challenge for him, and this gets to what John was saying before, if that's the agenda and at the end he can check those two boxes, great. But in the meantime, you have a lot of younger freshmen and second-term members who are saying, no, we want to deal with social issues. We want to deal with immigration. We want to deal with same-sex marriage.
All of which were elected to the Indiana Journal Assembly in their own right, and they have a right to offer anything they want to offer.
Right, but that's where the wheels start to come off. As do the Democrats
that were elected.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, will the Republican supermajorities abuse their power? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, all majorities do. Last week's question was, do modern campaigns discourage public service? 94% said yes, too many personal attacks. 6% said no, candidates need to be tested. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Time now for our post-election winners and losers roundtable. First, which political party in Indiana was the big winner? Ann Delaney.
Oh, I'm not going to give it to you. Democrats. Because of Donnelly and Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Mike.
No question. The Republicans, 7 of 9 members of Congress, the governor's office, the attorney general, I mean, it goes on, and 69 members of the House and 37 in the Senate. It's a great Republican day.
John?
I think it could have been more somber, certainly, at the Democratic celebration, but you cannot slice it anything other than a big victory for Republicans for the reasons you mentioned. 7-2 margin in the U.S. House delegation. It's a supermajority in both chambers, as Mike says. That's a winning night.
Good night for Republicans, but don't forget that the Libertarians tripled their usual output in the Senate race and doubled it in the governor's race, so it wasn't a bad night.
No, but the Republicans were the big winner. Okay, overall, who big winner? Mike McDaniel.
Mike Pence and Brian Bosma.
Oh, you've got to give it to Joe Donnelly for the big winner.
I think you have to give it to Joe Donnelly and to Glenda Ritz.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll go with those. Yeah. Glenda Ritz and Joe Donnelly. And actually, I wouldn't say Bosma because he's got to marshal the troops here. Pence, I would say yes.
I think Brian Bosma is a big winner. All right, big loser, Ann Delaney.
I think the special interest PACs, who spent an incredible amount of money in this state like they did nationally, and particularly Karl Rove, and had nothing to show for it.
I actually believe that that's true. The special interest PACs didn't have much to show for their effort.
John?
Tony Bennett, I don't know.
John? It's the big money, and in particular, Chris Ciccola.
I was going to say, Chris Ciccola put a lot of money in that Senate race, and some of it was personal, and it didn't come out well. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Schwanis of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000th and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.